The opinions expressed on this program are those of the hosts and their guests, and not of Blue Sky Broadcasting.
Hey everybody, my name is Barbara, and it's my privilege to welcome you to the program and to welcome our guest today, Ammon Bundy. He is a candidate for governor right here in Idaho. We're looking forward to this conversation, and he's seeking the nomination, obviously, in the primary coming up in 2022. So Ammon Bundy, there you are on the phone with us. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yes. Where are you calling from?
I'm actually here in Emmett. That's where I live, and I'm in my hometown.
You know, it's sunny and 17 degrees here in Sandpoint. What's happening there in Emmett?
That's about the same here. I think the high is supposed to be like 26, and we're far from that, but the sun is shining.
Well, when the sun shines, it makes all the difference in the world. You know, we have a couple of commercial breaks, Ammon, that we take during the program, and I want to get one of them out of the way right now, so we're going to go to a commercial break. Don't go anyplace, everybody, and Ammon, we're going to be right back.
Bonner's Ferry, your hometown sawmill, help you. Spruce up your home with new flooring, a decorative mantel, or desktop, or beams up to 44 feet long. Just about anything you can dream up, the guys at TNT can help design. For all your wood product needs, it's thick and thin lumber, fast, reliable service, and competitive pricing. See the mill at 4355 Cow Creek Road or check out their website at tntbeams.com.
Grunberg Sloss Collector's Cabinet has added ReadyWise Survival and Emergency Foods to their line of food and storage supplies. They also feature preparedness and homesteading books and supplies, plus ammo and knives. And, of course, Grunberg Sloss carries U.S. and world coins, gold and silver, bullion, jewelry, and more. Open Monday through Friday from 10 to 5, located on Triangle Drive, just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Grunberg Sloss Collector's Cabinet.
NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is the largest grassroots organization for mental health in the country. Hi, this is Jessica Rachels. Our Far North branch has been serving Bonner County for over 14 years. Your mental health matters to us, and we are dedicated to improving your quality of life in any way we can. Due to the holidays, we will not have our monthly support meeting, but have some great speakers lined up in 2022. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Since 1990, Brown's Northside Machine and Gear has been your local diesel and heavy equipment expert serving the logging, trucking, and construction industry. They carry the reliable Deca line of batteries, and they now stock InstaChains and the latest in LED light bars. So call Brown's today at 263-4643 or stop by the shop located on Triangle Drive behind the Bonner Mall. Their ASC Certified Master Mechanics can help keep your equipment on the road all winter long. Open from 7 to 5 weekdays and Saturdays until 1. Brown's Northside Machine and Gear.
I'm Tiffany. I have some tips for you on how to quit smoking like I did. First, I did some reading about it. I found a lot of great advice on how to quit smoking and picked out the ways I thought would work best for me. I started by setting a quit date. Then I threw out my ashtrays, lighters, and matches. I did other things too, like exercising more, and it worked. But I'd still get cravings, especially on long car rides. To help me with that, I put a picture of my mother in my car. She died of lung cancer from smoking cigarettes when I was only 16. Now I have a 16-year-old daughter. That picture of my mother reminds me that I don't want to miss all the things my daughter is going to do in her life, including turning 17.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
KBFI, KSPT, North Idaho's radio.
We are back. Thanks for waiting through that. Ammon Bundy, again, welcome to the program. You know, I'm interested in, let's just kind of start with some general questions. Why you're running for governor? What is it that has inspired you to do that?
I think overall, I feel our country is in, I don't know, even disarray might be the right word. I think we're in trouble politically and in other ways. I think the people of Idaho, majority, still want to be free and understand what that means. And I also see that Idaho is following many of the paths that other states around us, such as Oregon and Washington and so forth, has followed. And it's going to take a strong stand against that to make sure that Idaho doesn't become an Oregon or California. And that's ultimately what motivated me, so that we could pass on the good things that we have and the things we've enjoyed in this country and in this state onto our children.
You know, I think some people may think this is a big jump. You've been in Idaho for about 7 years. You have not held legislative positions. And I'm getting feedback, Pat. Okay, thanks. Did you hear that? I mean, you know, I think that there are some people that think this might be a big jump, Ammon, for you. You know, 7 years in Idaho and not yet a part of the legislature. How do you answer those people who have some concerns about that?
Well, I've been probably more politically involved, unfortunately, than almost anybody in the state. I might even put it up against in the country, standing for people's rights. I've had to face, false charges. I've been incarcerated for 2 years. I had to fight through that. And it was all political. It was a political prosecution. And I've seen the inside very, very clearly, much better than, you know, your typical legislature that goes into the legislature and gets caught up into that. I've seen what the effects are directly when we do not make the right decisions. And I think that'll definitely help me and guide me and make it so I won't compromise, which is typically what happens. I think it was Ronald Reagan that said that the only thing a politician learns by being a politician is politics. And I'm not a politician, and I think that's what Idaho needs right now.
I think that is a very interesting comment, that you're not a politician and you think that's what Idaho needs. You know, I know I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but in the people that I've talked to after the last couple of weeks when I have had your program scheduled, the first thing they go to is what happened in 2014 in Nevada, what happened in Oregon. I mean, they have that concept or that picture of you. And it's kind of there are just a lot of words, depending on where you stand, but kind of anti-government comes up, kind of renegade, you know, where I know you, but I want to give you a chance to answer that your response to things is to go off someplace and pull a gun out or have a protest. And I think people need to understand how you respond to those memories that many people have.
Well, first of all, a lot of people need to be informed of what happened in 2014 down at the Bundy Ranch. I mean, we were the ones who were peaceful. We were the ones who were not destroying other people's property. We were not killing cattle. We were not body slamming people to the asphalt, tasing people, destroying water infrastructure that had been in there over 100 years. We were the ones being very, very peaceful. We were peacefully resisting what went on, and that's the way it happened the entire time. Finally, we got enough eyes on it and enough people to become aware of what went on, that people from all over the country started coming, and ultimately the federal government lost the PR battle and had to leave the area. And those are the facts. And you know, when we, and I think that it's that private property rights of an individual are worth standing. Otherwise, we're literally slapping the face of our military, people who serve in the military, our police officers. All of them are, you know, there to defend rights. And if we're saying that we can't do it as a people when there's such abuse going on and that somehow that is wrong, then what are we saying and what are we doing?
Let's turn our attention to some issues. One of the issues, maybe not so much in Idaho, we see it in other areas and other states, but that doesn't mean that we are immune from it, and that is election integrity. I know we feel here in Bonner County very blessed with the way elections are handled here, but how do you see election integrity, especially in Idaho? And as governor, what would you do, if anything, to further ensure election integrity?
Well, election integrity is a concern on the minds of a lot of people in Idaho. I've traveled the state now 3 times, spoke to thousands of people, and it is a concern. It's one of the concerns, probably one of the top 10 concerns that are brought up almost every meeting. And so it is a concern, and I am not just going to stand around and, you know, complain about it. My campaign is being very active about getting people in place, volunteering for the at the voting booth, also having poll watchers, and we're building campaign software where people can report anything that might be questionable, concerns, and report that immediately. And the election night, we'll have a team of attorneys and computer forensics individuals all on staff, because we believe that, you know, it has to be reported quickly, it has to be resolved quickly, and the more sunlight we can shine on an issue, the better off we are. And we just saw, we're going through this right now, where we put together some people in a lawsuit for Meridian City Council. There was an election integrity issue there that the county refuses to take care of, where they did not print the ballots correctly, and the opponent won because of that. And we're fighting that battle now.
You know, speaking of ballots, and I have talked to a couple of other candidates in this area of election integrity, and one of the ideas that has come up, and I think this comes up either out of Arizona or New Mexico or both, where they have certain watermarks and certain identifiers actually on the actual printed ballot that cannot be replicated, they can't be Xeroxed or copied, and they're very hard. It's kind of like some of what, if you put under the light your passport when you go through the airport. And apparently the cost for making our ballots have those markers is not that much. I've heard quoted $1 million. I don't know, that sounds kind of low for anything today, but have you heard of it, and what do you think of it?
Well, I haven't heard of those details. I know there's several different identifiers, and I agree that we need to make sure we have the individual properly identified, at least as a, you know, resident of Idaho, resident of the county or the city or whatever it might be, and then also that make sure that we don't have duplicate voters, and otherwise, you know, what is voting for? I mean, if we're just going to make it open, and if we're just going to make it where it hasn't, where it's easy to manipulate and where it can be controlled, then the results mean very little. And so, I'm absolutely for ways to identify and make sure that we don't have duplicate ballots to identify voters.
Yeah, that seems to be the key. We don't want duplicate voters, and we don't want duplicate ballots. So that's the challenge for everyone, including our governor. Education also, as you well know, comes up in every conversation, from the funding to whether we need full-day kindergarten or not. What are some of the education issues that you are either, you know, you're in favor of this, you want to do this or support this that's ongoing, or you're really concerned about?
Well, the size of the public education in general is a concern. It's about a third of the state budget. It's
two-thirds.
Two-thirds of the state budget. You're absolutely correct. And it's a concern because we're not educating very well, and that's typically what happens with government programs. They usually spend a ton of money, and they don't get a whole lot done. They're not very accountable. And so I believe that we need to apply free market principles in our public education system. I think we need to put the parents back in charge of the money so that the school districts and the administrators are accountable to the parents and not to the the teachers' lobbyists and the teachers' unions or the Department of Education. I think it needs to be put back in the parents' hands and then also in the communities. And they determine where those funds go and those budgets go. And we need to also, and this scares a lot of people when I say this, but we need to free up the teachers and the administrators in what curriculum they can teach so they're not being mandated by the federal government or even by the state. So again, that they're accountable to the school board, who should be accountable to the people in that community, and the parents should control the money so that when they truly pull their child out of that school pays that penalty. And that would correct a lot of things. It wouldn't make it perfect, but that would correct a lot of things in our public education system.
You know, when people hear about taking money and putting more of it in the parents' hands, and I'm assuming you mean through vouchers, where parents can make a choice on where they want to fund and therefore send their kids, that it is a push down against public education. And of course, I don't see it that way. I see public or some people call it government education as an option, the same way a private school or a faith-based school or homeschooling or sending your kid out of state to some academy, someplace that you is something of value in your family and that you want to do. Is that the way you see it? I mean, this is not a downside to public education. This is just opening up options for parents and putting some money in their hands so that they can actually do those options.
Yeah, that's exactly how I see it. It's not, you know, it's not necessarily pointed at one institution or another. As we know, if you want to improve the quality of something, then create some competition.
Mm-hmm.
And this is certainly going to do that. Even among the public schools, there'll be a little bit of competition or a little specialization that will go on. But yeah, certainly not an attack on education system. But we do have a problem. We have an education system here in Idaho. It's pretty typical across the United States and most states, but that is really not doing a great job in educating our children. And it's not necessarily an individual teachers or administrators or even the legislature's fault. The system is not designed to succeed. And we need to change that.
You know, it's interesting, Ammon, that you brought up the curriculum, because that gets us into the weeds a little bit. And the one area, and I'm sure that you've thought of this and discussed it with your team through the years, and that is there needs to be some similarities in curriculum and standards. So we have some kind of apples and apples way of saying how school districts and schools are performing, because we have kind of standardized tests. And I know that some people hate that, but they're necessary so we know kind of how we're doing in comparison with each other and how we're doing nationally. So we need some semblance of similarity in curriculum. Do you agree or disagree with that argument?
Well, I don't fully disagree, but it's very, very tricky, because then you're creating this box and you're saying that everybody has to, you know, live in that box. But I think the way we accomplish that is we keep really good track of the success of the children, of the students coming out of the school. I mean, what kind of jobs are they getting? What are their incomes? What type of jobs? Those type of things are indicators of true success, not whether they pass some test or not. And I think that that's what we should be accountable to and should be tracking.
That leads me to think about trade schools, better education, more money spent at whatever school you choose for your child to attend, that it would have some emphasis on trade plumbing, construction, you know, technology, you know, those different, and even not even that, you know, electricians, auto mechanics. We need these people with these skills. And I think everyone would agree to you that we need more money going in that direction. We need to really support students whose talents go in that direction.
I would have to agree with you. I look at my life and I see where I did go to college, Southern Utah University, for just a little while, and I started my business at the same time. And ultimately, my business took over, and the business took over, so I went into it full time. And all the skills that I used in my business, that, you know, I had one of the largest fleet maintenance companies, private fleet maintenance companies in Arizona, hired hundreds of people, dealt with millions of dollars of budgets. I mean, I run that business and built it up for 21 years. And most of those skills I learned in high school, at least at high school age. And I do believe that our apprentice programs, our, you know, trade and tech programs need to be funded better. They need to be offered to our students. And it needs to be something that, when they leave high school, they're ready to either go into the workforce or they're well prepared for second level education.
Or we could emphasize both. I think it would help me if I knew more about my car as well as going to college with the training that I got. So, you know, I kind of want, you know, I could see having both of these streams being valuable in my life. All right, Ammon, I am enjoying our conversation. I hope our listeners are too. I'm sure they are. We're going to take another break. Don't go anywhere, everybody. We'll be right back.
BF Quick Lube at the top of the South Hill does more than just lubes and oil changes. They do them quick. Just stop by or call and make an appointment at 208-267-7481. Along with regular maintenance, BF Quick Lube can handle most of your other auto repairs. BF Quick Lube would like to take this time to say thank you to each of their customers for putting their trust and support in their services year after year. For a quick lube and oil change and so much more, visit your friends at BF Quick Lube on the South Hill in Bonner's Ferry.
Bonner's Ferry Glass has long been the place to go for a multitude of services, including rock chip repair or windshield replacement and lock and key services. Plus, you'll always find a staff of trained professionals at Bonner's Ferry Glass. If you need commercial and or residential doors, windows, garage doors, screen window and door repair, or even custom glass cutting for tabletops or picture frames, they do it all at Bonner's Ferry Glass on the South Hill in Bonner's Ferry.
Make holiday magic for family and friends with your own personal firework display from Jill's Fireworks in Bonner's Ferry. Jill's Fireworks is now open daily from 11 to 7 p.m. until New Year's Eve. Welcome in the new year. Make an impression at your party. Light up the night sky. Jill's Fireworks has what you need. Jill's Fireworks, 236 Hatchery Road. Cash, Visa, and MasterCard accepted. Masks required. Check their Facebook page, Jill's Fireworks.
Hi, this is Lauren
and Eve
with Knutson Chevrolet.
It's the year-end sales event at Knutson Chevrolet with 47 brand new 2022 Silverados and over 20 Chevy Colorados in stock. We've got the truck you want.
During the year-end sales event at Knutson Chevrolet, we have the best selection of 2022 Chevy Blazers and Equinoxes we've had all year, so you can drive yours home today.
We also want to buy your car or truck, and we are paying top dollar.
Knutson Chevrolet is your family-owned, family-operated dealership since 1939 that puts customer service above all else.
Visit Knutson.com to schedule your at-home test drive and even purchase your next vehicle online using ShopClickDrive.
Find new roads at Knutson Chevrolet.
Minutes west of Coeur d'Alene, just a short drive east of Spokane at 1900 East Polston Avenue, Post Falls.
Knutson Chevrolet, hard to say, easy to save.
The fighting spirit of the Marine Corps is born of battles won. Battles won within, over enemies of fear, enemies of doubt. It's who we are. It's what we do. It's a promise made to you for more than two centuries. A promise of the Marines.
North Idaho's radio, KSPT and KBFI.
Hey everybody, welcome back in. We've got it going on today with Governor candidate Ammon Bundy. He's calling us from his hometown, Emmett, Idaho. And we're happy to have you on. Welcome back in, Ammon. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I want to ask kind of an open-ended question here. If you were governor, as governor, I know there's so many issues that will come through the legislature and the courts and across your desk, but what are, let's list two or three that you would be the most concerned about, very passionate about, something that you really want to see done or completed or strengthened if you were elected governor?
Yeah, so elimination of property tax is one of them. I see it as just an open attack on private property, and I intend on replacing that with a consumption tax. We can talk in detail about that some other time, or if you want to.
No, let's go into it right now. Just keep the other, whatever the other issues are, but no property tax. You want to replace with a consumption tax. I'm assuming you mean a sales tax?
Yeah, I mean, some might call it a transfer or a sales tax. Yes, and the problem with property tax right now is they're directly connected with the taking of property, and the state has taken, thousands of people's property away, and it's typically the elderly people who retired, maybe somebody who's disabled or has lost their job for a long period of time. And these people end up losing their home, even though they may have been paid for, they end up losing their home to the state because they simply can't pay the property tax. And property tax is a Marxist theory. It is something that Karl Marx presented and something that our country did not do until the early 1900s, and we implemented it because it was, the government looked at it as something very easy to be able to pay for government, and we need to protect our private property. We need to make sure that even though we retire, we don't lose our property. If we fall on hard times, even though we've paid the mortgage, paid it off, or whatever, we own it, we don't lose it. And there's a better way, and that is to replace it with a consumption tax.
So a sales tax, would these be targeted or just across the board sales taxes? And the reason I ask that is it seems, Ammon, I'm remembering, I don't know, maybe even 10 years ago, Maine or Connecticut or somebody passed what they called a luxury tax, and they just ramped up the taxes on, big boats and I don't know what else. And the whole industry just went
right
down the tubes. So would this be a tax that would just be across the board? You know, it's not going to punish anyone. It's just if you consume and you buy and whatever it is, you're going to pay tax on it.
So the consumption tax or the transfer tax that I'm talking about would not be connected to just your everyday purchases. It would basically be when you purchase property, then at that point you would pay a tax, a certain percent, say like a 2 to 5%, depending on where it needs to be. And that would just go to the same place that your property tax goes to right now. And it would be, typically about the same as, we want to lower the size of government. We want to lower taxes. We want to make government more efficient. But this would be basically able to fund the legitimate purposes of government. You would roll it into your mortgage, so when your mortgage is paid off, then you own your home.
Okay, so I'm understanding you replace ongoing year-to-year property taxes with a one-time, just speaking of property taxes, a one-time tax at the time of purchase, And what about at the time of sale? If 10 years later you decide to sell your property, do you pay another tax at that time, or is it just the purchaser pays?
You would not pay it at the time of sale. The purchaser would pay it at the time when they purchased it.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. So you think that this wouldn't replace everything in property tax, but it would replace enough for perhaps a smaller government?
No. This actually, if you do the math, it actually, if you're not careful, will generate more income for the county and for the state than what it's doing now.
Okay.
This would be a full replacement. This would not be, you know, in fact, if you do the math, you take a $400,000 home, and we're paying right now about $2,000 to $3,000 a year, depending on what county you're in, a 30-year period of time, because that's about the length of most mortgages, that's $60,000 to $90,000. If you replace it with a transfer tax or a consumption tax, let's just say at 5%, take a $400,000 home, that same home, you're talking about $60,000 to $120,000, depending on, you know, what percentage. So yeah, that needs to be legislated. It needs to be worked out. But we're talking about being able to, you know, have the legitimate funds that government needs for its legitimate purposes, and still own our homes after we pay our mortgages off.
Okay, so now I understand how you were saying tie it to the mortgage. So you're paying this transfer consumption tax assessed at the time of purchase, and it's just laid out just like your mortgages over the next 15 or 30 years or whatever term.
It would actually be part of the mortgage.
Part of the mortgage.
You would roll it into the mortgage. That way the state gets paid. And you would just pay the mortgage. Once the mortgage is paid off, then it's done.
And then there's
a lot of advantages of this too, because like a county that's developing, well, if they're developing and expanding and that property is being sold, well, then they get that money up front and they could do infrastructure, roads, underground, all of that, rather than having to go take out bonds and, or try to trickle the expense. There's lots of benefits to it, to both the people and to a county.
I can see how the county or the whoever the recipients are of this money would get it up front, because it's the bank or your financial institution or whatever is the funding agent, and you're paying them back. But the county, for example, they've received whatever money is theirs up front.
That is correct.
What's something else that you would like to see happen in Idaho if you were elected governor?
Well, I think it's far past time to get our land back in Idaho from the federal government. 63% of our land and 72% of our subsurface mineral rights are being controlled by Washington, D.C., and they've made it so that Idaho can't even pay its own bill. We have to have what they call PILT, which is payment in lieu of taxes, because so much of our land and so much of our resources is controlled that the federal government has to pay us money in order for us to pay our bills, where normally we'd be able to be thriving if we had our lands and resources like the eastern and midwestern states do.
If this land, or even a part of the land, of I think you said 60-some percent of our land is under federal control, they don't own it per se, but they control it. Am I understanding that correctly?
That is correct. It's unappropriated land.
Okay, so nobody really owns
title.
It.
Yeah, I mean, that's where the constitutional battle is. The place is the Constitution doesn't authorize the federal government to own it after the area has become a state, only when it was a territory, which is pre-statehood. And so they have just basically taken that land and kept it from the people of the state, and it's becoming a real problem with the state being able to fund itself, and also the people, and more importantly, the people being able to thrive inside the state.
You know, within this conversation, you know, people say, okay, say Idaho takes back even a percentage of this land that that the feds control but don't own. What would we do with it? How would we ensure the good stewardship, or that it wouldn't just all be developed? Or, you know, what would be some of the boundaries or parameters that, Ammon, that you would like to see in place if even a percentage of this happened?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's a concern for people because we have this, you know, culture of, you know, being outdoor and enjoying our outdoors, and it's certainly part of who we are. And just to kind of put it in perspective, we're talking about 32 plus million acres that the federal government is controlling. And so what I'm proposing, and we're getting a little more detail as we get going here, but I'm proposing that we take, our wilderness areas, our, you know, heavily wooded areas, the areas that we enjoy, we hunt, hike, fish, and we camp in and all of that, and we designate that as multiple use areas. And that was the way that the West was developed anyway, multiple use. So what I mean by that is that so that the people have an actual right to access, to hunt, to hike, to fish, to camp, but that also we are logging, we are grazing, we are exploring mineral opportunities, that's what's going on. And, you know, that is the way that the West was developed, and most of our, you know, hunting roads and so forth were actually logging roads. And they worked side by side, or enjoyed the land side by side, and a good part of the land needs to be designated for that as multiple use. And then around our cities and our towns, where there's some other opportunity for agriculture and so forth, then we need to dispose of that to the people through some public disposal process.
In other words, sell it for whatever zoning purposes. We are late right now on our next break. We're just getting into this conversation. So everybody hang in there with us. We've got one more commercial break, and we're going to come right back to our guest, Governor candidate Ammon Bundy.
When you've been in a car accident, one of the first things you'll do is make a call to your insurance company.
I've recently been in a car accident, and I need to start a claim to get my vehicle repaired.
I'm sorry to hear that. Is everything okay?
Yes, thank you, but my car is totaled.
Well, we have a number of preferred shops in your area that can take care of that for you.
Oh, that's okay. I've already decided to take my vehicle to North Idaho Collision Repair Center in Bonners Ferry. They said they will handle all the paperwork and get my vehicle in and repaired as soon as possible.
Oh, well, I see here they're not one of our direct repair shops, and we can't guarantee the work that they do.
Well, actually, any guarantee on the vehicle will come directly from the shop that does the repairs. And North Idaho Collision Repair Center offers a written lifetime warranty on anything they do. They use original manufactured parts and will restore my vehicle to pre-accident condition. I'm taking my car to North Idaho Collision Repair Center in Bonners Ferry.
Hi, this is Shane from North Idaho Collision Repair Center reminding you it's always your choice where you get your vehicle repaired. So tell your insurance company I'm going to North Idaho Collision in Bonners Ferry.
Co-op Gas and Supply Company Incorporated is your locally owned propane, farm, home, and hardware store. We've been in business as a community cooperative for 87 continuous years, and we're proud to still be owned by the people who shop here. At this time of the year, we see how important local businesses are to the community, from bringing product from all over the world to your home to participating in fundraisers and community programs. And so we wish to thank you, our customers, for your membership and continued patronage, which makes serving our community possible. This is Kathy, along with George Haley, General Manager, our Board of Directors, and the entire co-op staff, wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas and a prosperous New Year. We hope to see you again soon at the Co-op Gas and Supply Company, 125 Tibbetts Lane in Ponderay, where neighbors have been helping neighbors since 1934. 208-263-6820.
Hi, this is Lauren
and Eve
with Knutson Chevrolet.
It's the year-end sales event at Knutson Chevrolet with 47 brand new 2022 Silverados and over 20 Chevy Colorados in stock. We've got the truck you want.
During the year-end sales event at Knutson Chevrolet, We have the best selection of 2022 Chevy Blazers and Equinoxes we've had all year, so you can drive yours home today.
We also want to buy your car or truck, and we are paying top dollar.
Knutson Chevrolet is your family-owned, family-operated dealership since 1939 that puts customer service above all else.
Visit Knutson.com to schedule your at-home test drive and even purchase your next vehicle online using Shop Click Drive.
Find new roads at Knutson Chevrolet.
Minutes west of Coeur d'Alene, just a short drive east of Spokane at 1900 East Polston Avenue, Post Falls.
Knutson Chevrolet, hard to say, easy to save.
The fighting spirit of the Marine Corps is born of battles won. Battles won within, over enemies of fear, enemies of doubt. It's who we are. It's what we do. It's a promise made to you for more than two centuries. A promise of the Marines.
KBFI 1450, KSPT 1400, and 97.1 FM.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for being with us today. I appreciate it. Our guest is governor candidate here coming up in the primary, Ammon Bundy. And I was reading a statement that you made about if there is going to be any opportunity to unseat Governor Brad Little, it's going to happen at the primary. It's going to happen when Republicans and Republican candidates kind of narrow themselves down to one candidate and to try to get that person over the line so they can be the nominee in the fall. And everybody I talk to agrees with that statement. And so the question is, how is that going to happen? I mean, you want to be governor, you want to run, you don't want to knock yourself out. And nor does Janice McGeehan, and I just talked to our mayor here in Sandpoint, you know, Shelby Ronstadt, you know, he's got his name on the list. How do we get, coalesce behind one candidate if that is the intention of Republicans and to unseat Brad Little?
Well, just so we understand, the reason for a primary is to do what we're talking about.
Right.
But what we have is we have a governor who's really a liberal and has been a liberal and actually will admit that he's a liberal. And he's taken the seat of the Republican Party as governor. And so, first of all, we need to be aware of that our governor, Governor Little, is not a true Republican. He's not a true conservative. And his actions show that. His voting record shows that. And he'll try to convince people otherwise, but that is the truth. So we end up with an issue because our primaries have been taken over by, a liberal individual who says that he's a Republican. So now Janice and I are both basically neck to neck in the polls. And Governor Little is just a few points ahead of us, and we have a problem. And the problem is the people. It's not necessarily Janice or I's problem. It's caused because of Governor Little and his who he really is. But the people have to decide, and they need to make a decision. They need to make a decision. I think they ought to make it on merit. I think they ought to make it on what a person is truly running for. I think people should go to my website at votebundy.com and really thoroughly go through it. Go through my Keep Idaho plan. Look at my past history to see if I'm willing to actually fight for it, if I'm willing actually to get it done. And then go to Janice's website. Check out what she's proposing. What is she saying that we're going to do? Not just platitudes, but what is she saying we're going to actually accomplish? And then look at her record, look at her voting record, look at who she is, and then make a decision and make it fairly early this year and get behind that candidate, start supporting them financially, start supporting them by talking about them. And then one of us will come to the top and be very clear who is at the top and who the people are choosing. Also, we need to have a bunch of debate. We need to have public debate. Janice and I need to debate. We need to discuss things in front of the people. We need to be open with that and willing to debate and give every opportunity for the people of Idaho to truly see what there is to see and make a decision. And then hopefully it'll be obvious by the time the primaries come around in May who the people have chosen.
Ammon, I'm interested in what you think of another candidate, not a candidate that you will be running against, but I had Priscilla Giddings on my program. It's probably been at least a month ago, and I was reading through her book, Curiously Strong, which I do recommend to everyone. It's an amazing story, wherever you are on the political spectrum or whatever, but it's an amazing book, Curiously Strong, Priscilla Giddings. But what I'm interested, she's running for lieutenant governor. Do you support Priscilla Giddings? Are you willing to endorse her for that position, or where are you on that?
Yeah, absolutely. There are several reasons why. Priscilla came to the Capitol building on June 23rd by law and to try to end the emergency order of Brad Little. She spoke openly at that meeting about what she felt and who she is. I think she's very sincere, honest, and more than anything, I believe that she is truly willing to fight and to stand up against these actions that are happening in Idaho that are going to destroy our state. She's willing to fight. She's willing to speak out against it. And, I haven't had a ton of conversations with her, but from what I've seen and what I've read, just like you, I support her as lieutenant governor.
You know, one other area for issues, and I think we've got time for this. We've got a few minutes left. And that is, you talked about getting land control back from the federal government into the state hands for multi-use, to sell with, certain zoning and planning restrictions. It leads me to the concept, and I'm pretty sure that you will agree with this, but it leads me to the concept that the governor is really one of our watchmen at the state to push back against the federal government, to secure our boundaries, to whether they're, constitutional boundaries, legal boundaries, maybe actual physical boundaries. It's the devil is always in the detail. If you were governor and you agree with the idea that the governor is one of the watchmen of our state from infringement by the federal government, how would you do that? What would be some of the things that you believe that you could legally do?
Well, so you're absolutely right. The mechanism that our founders put in place to check and balance the federal government, the general government as they called it, was the state, and governor being the executive of the state, that is his duty to protect the rights of the people, to use the power and resources, influence of the state to make sure the people's rights are secure. There are many ways that I will do this, but along with standing with sheriffs across the state saying, look, you're not going to enforce gun laws in our county. You're not going to enforce mandates in our counties. You're not going to do these things. And supporting the local governments, including the sheriffs, especially the sheriff, and their duty to secure and protect the rights of the people. That's just one way.
Ammon, I ask you a big question with, about a minute to go. We are winding down 45 seconds. So I want to say thank you to you for joining us today. I look forward to talking to you again. And I appreciate during the holiday season that you're on the air with us. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. Next week, I will be talking with Jody McPhee Giddings all about the National and the Idaho Walkaway programs. You don't want to miss this one, so you can join in. Until then, this is Barbara saying take care, and may God bless you.